G'day everyone, and welcome back to the show. And today's guest, we've got returning for the third time, Ellis Taylor. How you going, mate?
Hello, Pete. I'm good, mate. Thank you very much. And you?
Yeah, good. I very much appreciate having you back on. Out of a lot of people that come on, it's a pleasure talking to you, because when I found out about you and I started talking to you, you make people like myself feel sane, because I'm having similar experiences and I can't explain them how you do. But just the interdimensional aspect, I do feel like this is someone I can relate to, because the way you explain it, a lot of experiences have the same thing and they don't want to go there because of how not in terms of 3D normal it is. And I was in tears when I first heard you talk a few times, because I'm like, this is exactly how you try to explain what the hell you're experiencing. Like, you'll jump from one thing to another, but that's what happens. That is exactly what happens in the experiences. One second you're experiencing this, next second you're experiencing this. Sometimes you have no friggin' idea what's going on. Sometimes you've got some idea what's going on. And this is why I love talking to you and following your work, because for experiences out there having the interdimensional journey, I guess, how you go into it with your books and that and your website, that's how it is. You know, this is and it's really a touching on our multidimensional aspect of ourselves. So I just want to, and that's no disrespect, I mean so much that I respect you and honour how you go out and present yourself, because it's not normal, you know, for experiences to go into that, the real tripped out side of things.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know where I am half the time either, and yeah, you're right actually. I do tend to kind of go from one thing to the other, but to me it doesn't seem like I'm going from one subject to the other or one thing to the other. It is all lateral and multidimensional, and you know, it does all connect, and I've always been a bit like that, I suppose.
Well that's the real weird, profound nature of the experiences, but one second you're doing this, the next minute this is happening and you're in a completely different place. So, you know, that this is just the way it is. And what I find, even talking to other experiences, is a lot of the time they will hold back the true tripped out experience in the experience, because they go, like later they'll come back and go, look, I told you about this, but I didn't tell you about this. And they will only tell you about this because they heard you mention something similar. You know what I mean? Okay. So, and I understand that. I understand people wanting to hold back sometimes, because it's just like they're going to think I'm nuts if I say this. But it's people like yourself and others that break that ground to get some dialogue and some talk going on about that. Now, we haven't caught up, I'd say, for over a year now, would it be? It'd be something like that.
Yeah, I was just looking, actually. I think it was mid-November last year, so that's been quite a while. Yeah.
What's been happening for you? I know there's been lots happening, but what's some things that have been going on that have been sort of, you know, like a blinding light for you that you've noticed going on, like just in the world and experience-wise?
Ooh. I've got a shocking memory, Pete. So if I don't mention something, it's not because I don't want to. It's because I can't remember. And I may later on remember, and then, you know, it'll slip in. But I suppose the major thing that's happened to me this year is that I injured my back in July, and that's kind of slowed me down in a lot of ways. It's been very painful, and I may be having to have an operation on it, but that's been kind of something that's going through my life the last 6 months or so. But what it has done is make me stop and rethink where I'm going in my life. I've kind of had loads of hints to stop what I've been doing in other ways for quite a long time, but this has been a big one, and I'm currently getting better at the moment, but it has been a struggle. forgot where I was going to go with that, but I'll come back to it if I remember. but what's happened? I've had a few kind of strange events that I haven't been able to put my finger on what it is about. It's like for some reason, one instance then, I got up in the middle of the night. This was like a couple of months ago, I think. I got up in the middle of the night and went to the loo, went to go back to bed, and I saw all of these small ETs, the usual ones that I see. They're a kind of a fawny, browny, peanutty, caramelly colour. I don't see greys as such. I don't see grey coloured ones. I've seen this colour and I've seen white ones of that particular race.
They're the two of the most common I see too.
Are they?
Yeah.
Okay.
Out of the greys. I have seen grey, but they're not normal. I wouldn't say, normal grey. But go on, mate. Sorry.
Okay. And they were walking through the hallway. They were coming through the wall between the kitchen and the hallway, walking through the hallway and going through the wall between the hallway and the bedroom. And there was loads of them. They're just walking and going through. And I kind of looked at them and I noticed that instead of the spindly arms and legs, they actually had muscles. They were quite muscular. And I've not seen that before.
I have.
You have, yeah?
I have. And it was in Agnes Water I started seeing them.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, there was tall and short ones.
And yeah.
Almost had human-type bodies.
Yeah.
Still no private parts, but they were muscly.
That's it.
And they had black eyes and they were like white.
These ones were the caramel colour.
All right. I've seen white ones that are muscly.
Right,
so
that's okay.
Funny. Sorry.
But there was loads of them I just looked at them, saw them and got back into bed. Strange, isn't it?
You got any idea? What's the first thing that comes to mind on why they were doing it? Like they were in that, or you were seeing them there. Was there? Do you think there's any reason why you were picking up on it or you were tuned in or anything comes to mind on that?
No. Not that I can think of at the moment. Other than outside where I live, every night I go outside and look at the stars. And because I live in quite a remote place, the stars are beautiful if it's a clear night. But every night as well, there's a UFO over the bay, because I live near the sea. There's a UFO over the bay, and it's made up of lots of tiny lights. And it just kind of sits out there. And I've tried to photograph it, but my camera won't pick it up. But I've seen the beings that are in this craft, and they've got kind of a crescent-shaped face, like a concave sort of a face.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then one particular night, I started seeing this blue UFO in the west. That's right, in the western sky. And that's when I saw these muscular little aliens. Most of them, there were one or two tall ones, but most of them, nearly all of them, were small, really small. I mean, they were lower than the door handle. But before that, I'd kind of, I suppose I was feeling a bit down because of my back, you know, it was getting to me a bit because I couldn't do things I wanted to do and stuff. And I just said out loud, look, all you lot, right, talking about all the guards and guardians and all this kind of stuff, all you lot can off. Go away. And it was that night that all these ETs came into the into my place.
Had you lately you'd all been thinking about giving this whole thing up?
Well, not really, because I know that I can't. I mean, you just can't. But I was just thinking, well, you lot are supposed to be looking after me. I'm sick and tired of having no money, no bloody work. Now you've done me back in. I'm still sort of doing everything I can, you know, writing and talking and everything else. I need some help, and you lot are not giving it to me. So you,
you sound like me, or I sound like you, and the remedy for that's Mary Rodwell saying, Pete, talk to them and tell the dudes what you need, and as long as you pull your weight, they will pull their weight. That's usually what happens from it.
I don't subscribe to that.
But it's how, you know, it does get like that, doesn't it?
Yeah. Because deep in the heart of me, I know what it's about, you see. But then you live in this sort of reality, if you want to call it that. You kind of forget, you know, what it's about, because what it is about, Pete, is it's a shamanic journey. And it's a shamanic journey over multiple lifetimes. And you have to go, you have to be prepared to lose everything. You have to be prepared to go into the dark places. You have to do all this stuff, and you have to put up with every bit of crap that comes at you and come through it. That's what it all is.
The self-mastery
experience.
It's a very,
very tough journey. Yeah. It's death and it's rebirth and it's death and it's rebirth and it's suffering and all that stuff. And that's what shamans do. And it is a shamanic journey. And everybody who's genuinely having these experiences, that's what their path is. It's their soul path or should I say spirit path. But that's what it's about. And you just have to put up with it, and it's the same old thing about, you know, it's just making you stronger all the time. It may not seem like it. It may seem like very debilitating, and you might get fed up with it, but you actually are getting stronger and stronger. And so long as you're incarnating here, then you know that you haven't made it. You know, I mean, nobody's succeeded if they're still here. It's just a you know, it's lots of journeys that you're making, and you're improving all the time through difficulty. You know, that's how you improve, is through difficulty. I mean, if everything's a cinch and, you know, everything you do is like easy, you learn nothing. You know, so yeah, that's why I have to keep reminding myself.
I
get reminded.
I do too, mate. Like, I've been sitting here the last couple of nights with the missus. And I've almost been in, it's actually almost been a week now on and off going, I could almost just give all this crap up, but I know I can't. And it comes back to being part of the journey. It is part of the journey, and it's really me feeling sorry for me at the end of the day and getting over that and just accepting that this is how it is here. And I just see it all as a self-mastery experience. You've just got to, like I say, ride the energy rainbow. That's all you can do. Just ride it, go with the ups and downs and pull through it. One thing I would like to talk about is we're both going to be in a documentary called Don't Mention the Reptilians. If we could just talk about some of just the aspects of the experiences and the different natures of the different types of reptilians. One thing I will say, but which is funny, is I was doing I first got in contact with Chris over Skype. And every time we mentioned the reptilians, because this was about the documentary, everything cut out on Skype. And it was the only friggin' way I could communicate, because I was in Agnes Water at the time on 44 Acres in the middle of nowhere, and he's in the UK. So the only way we could communicate was through that, and it was just funny that was happening. And I was telling Giles, who I was living with at the time, I was just like, this is exactly how this can work. You know, something's picking up on it, obviously, of another agenda. And I've had a few experiences. Would you mind going into how your experiences have been? Not too much, so we can leave a bit in the doco, but just sort of an overview thumbnail sketch, if you can.
Well, as you know, and similar to yourself, there's been far more entities, etc., that engaged with and interacted with, etc., than reptilians. And then what did you say? We're going to keep.
We'll keep some stuff that don't go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What I tell you something I've noticed. I'll just point this out. What's really weird, I was in Perth, when was it? About 9 months ago, I think it was. Yeah, 9 months. Yeah, and I went to a Bunnings.
Yep, good old Bunnings.
And I went to get some paint. And Bunnings is usually, packed. There's loads and loads of people in there. It's a hardware store for anybody who needs to know. It's a big hardware kind of superstore. And I wanted to get some paint, and it was crowded out. But I went round the aisles, and I went to the paint department. Nobody at all in the paint department. Now, that's really weird for a start, right? But there was one lady at the counter. So I went up to her, and I asked her for this particular paint. And she went off with my partner I was with at the time. And went to get the paint, whereas I was looking through the colour charts. And anyway, they called me over. And she said, no, you don't want that paint, you want this paint. And I was thinking to myself, well, I've been painting for 30 years, I know what paint I want. I said, no, I'd like what I asked for. And she said, well, this is much better. I said, look, she just annoyed me. So I said, look, I've asked you for that paint. Can you just give me that paint? And she went really fast, right? And her eyes went, and I thought, well, yeah. And I really, really got to her. And I thought, well, that's a bit odd. They're getting into Bunnings. And then when I got back to the UK, I went to another hardware store in the UK. What's it called? Wickes, is it's called in the UK. And I went to get something. No, I wanted to get something, but I wanted to take something back at the same time. So I took this thing back, and this guy said, yeah, just go and get what you want. So I went and got what I want, came back to the counter, and there was another guy standing there. And he said to me, can you give me your name? And I said, what for? And he said, well, we need it. I said, well, you ain't having it. What do you want my name for? I said, here's the stuff. Just give me the refund or whatever. And he said, no, we have to have it. And we have to have your postcode and telephone number. I said, well, you ain't getting it. Just give me my refund. He said, well, the manager said we have to. I said, I don't care what he said. I said, you're not having it. What do you need that for? And his eyes went like that, and his tongue. I thought, what are they doing in hardware stores? Isn't that peculiar?
It is.
So, over
the time since that's happened, have you had any thoughts come to mind about that? About why that's been in, like, because this is why I love talking to you, because this is how my experiences play out too. They happen all the time, and when they're physical, they're in the most weirdest and sometimes public places like yourself, that this is how it is. This is just how, weird and wonderful it is, and a roller coaster sometimes. Has anything come to mind on that? On why the friggin' hardware stores and two different countries? Yeah, well, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It's kind of like it's a process. Like, to me, it feels like it's a process where they're gradually going into these sorts of places. Maybe because the people who go into these stores, because they're trade stores, aren't they? So people who go into these stores are, I don't know, maybe it's an attempt at possessing with some people, or maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's got a purpose, it's got to wonder what it is.
You were on the show once before when you talked about, if I'm correct, an experience in Sydney where there was reptilians, like the people were reptilians. Would you mind going into that quickly? I can't remember that. I remember something, you saying something about that.
Macquarie Shopping Centre. I think you're talking about that one. Yeah. I went there. And I parked the car and went into the shopping centre. It's quite a big shopping centre. And virtually everybody was a flipping reptilian. It was like crowds of them. I mean, hundreds of people in there, and virtually all of them were. And all sorts of different sorts. And I remember some of them looked like... I don't know whether you've seen Shrek. Have you seen Shrek?
Oh, I've seen one of them. Yep.
Well, there's a baby Shrek.
Yeah, yep, yep.
And loads of them look like that. And in the shopping centre, they've actually got this kind of weird statue monument thing that's something to do with time. And it's got... I can't remember exactly what it's like now, but there's some kind of spiral in it and everything, and it's very strange. And I don't know, it just seemed like that had some kind of, as if it was some kind of signal that this was actually a portal. Do you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
The actual, whatever this thing was in there, and it's right in the middle of it, and the stairs, if I remember, go up like that. Mm-hmm. Around this thing. But yeah, that was, yeah. But I mean, Sydney's full of them anyway. I mean, you just got to walk down the street and there's people shapeshifting all over the flipping place. And yeah, I mean, you'll be walking down the street and then you'll just be looking down, like, a way down. And you'll see somebody walking along and then all of a sudden they're right next to you. You know, in no time, they're there.
I've noticed that in Melbourne. And coming to Melbourne, like I told you before we got on air, the experiences, just sightings I'm having, but the activity on the ground and interdimensional stuff going on is friggin' mental. Yeah. And I remember not long after coming onto your work, I was in the city, geez, it probably was late 2012, maybe early 2013, and the first Parliament House is here. In 1901, it was like when we got our own constitution, I think it was 1901. And there's a friggin' statue of three half humans, half serpents with twin tails out the front. And then the sun symbol over each entrance into the Parliament House building, which coincidentally is where they did the... it was basically Institute of Technology, so they regulated what technology went out to the public and whatnot. I connected all these dots. Then I found these gargoyles over the entrance to all those buildings and then the lion's mane. Mm-hmm. And every time I go into the city, I'm going, should I really go in? Because I don't go in for what I'm meant to be doing. I'm going around connecting the friggin' dots while seeing Men in Black, which is I've had experiences with that, and weird helicopters that... People are eyes shut up and the people with me are picking up on there's just something not right. And I've been to Sydney a couple of times and it's been weird, but I think because I'm in Melbourne, I'm noticing the weirdness of it all, which there's a huge ties with Melbourne and Sydney to the UK as well, because we were once, you know, part of you guys in terms of how we'll run here. It's funny.
Still are, really.
Yeah, still are, really, yeah. And it's just funny how it's all set up that you're mentioning... Like, with you, I learned so much when you were talking about on the last show with the Sydney Harbour Bridge and the event that was going on there and Cathy Freeman, and that's just stuff that I wouldn't have picked up before. And then I talked to you and I'm just like, couldn't I see these?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it's happening all over the place. And once you kind of, your eyes are open to these things, then, you know, they don't go past you so easily. And, you know, it is all over the place. And it's like the other day I went to Windsor Castle, which is the Queen's primary residence. And you can go round it, you know, you sort of pay to go in there and everything, which annoys the hell out of me anyway, because we've paid for the bloody place. Why do we have to pay to go in? And then... so you walk around the outside, and it's very well kept, you know, and you know, it's an attractive looking place as far as castles go. And anyway, I walked around there and then went inside, but they won't let you take any pictures inside. You can take pictures outside, but not inside. So I'm walking around there, and looking at these different things, and I go into one room, and I can't remember what which room it was. It was something. It could have been the king's sitting room, right? And in front of the fireplace, and it's no wonder they don't let you take photographs. In front of the fireplace, each side of the fireplace were these like small statues of the god Pan. Yeah. You know, the Greek god Pan, yeah. He's got the horns and cloven feet and all that stuff. Both of them, in front of the fireplace, holding a baby in each arm.
Sacrifice?
That's do you know what I mean? I mean, that's blatant, isn't it? You know, two babies like that. And anyway, I went on, and then I saw the next room, I think it was, had up on the top, on the frieze, it had, like, Adelaide, right? Now, that was the queen of William the Fourth, I think it was. And this was William the Fourth's suites, and his bedroom, his dressing room, his sitting room, this sort of stuff, you know. And I went, after that, it was like the hallway. And there was like a guide there who was kind of just answering questions and that kind of stuff, all in the uniform and that sort of thing. I said, oh, excuse me, can I ask you a question? He said, yeah. I said, why has it got Adelaide's name up in the king's bedroom? Oh, because she was his queen. I said, well, why hasn't it got his name up there like it has in the other rooms? Oh, and he went into this spiel, and when he'd finished, and he was stunned, there was two guides there, actually. I was talking to him, and there was this woman guide next to him. And when he'd finished, I said, I don't believe you. And she went like that and wore it. And he kind of went, so I took him back. I said, that sounds like rubbish to me. I said, is that what they told you to say? He said, well, I can see your point. He said, you're wondering why the king's name isn't in his bedroom. I said, yeah. He said, well, I haven't got another answer for that. I said, well, I'd like to find out. And then I went on a bit further, and there was another guide. And I asked him where they do the ceremonies for the Knights of the Garter. And he was a nice guy, actually. He was sort of an ordinary sort of a guy, you know. And he said, well, you know, in there, and he was telling me all about it, and coincidentally Prince William is the 1,000th. I mean, how did that work out, you know? And I said to him, where was the fire then? Where did the fire, you know, start? And he said, oh, when you go into the next room, he said, you'll see it. And I'd noticed as I'd gone round how many octagonal rooms there are in there, right?
Now,
octagonal rooms. Yeah, loads of them. And I was always sort of going in there and looking what's above, you know, and there was usually a skylight or some kind of special candelabra or something like that, you know. And, of course, on the floor there's markings as well. They're, you know, they're portals, you know. And he said, well, in that next room, he said, is where it started. I said, well, how did it start? And he said, well, at first they thought it was to do with the builders because there was some renovation going on at the time. And I thought, yeah, same old story. They did the same at Clevedon House. Clevedon House tried to blame it on the builders until they realised the builders weren't there. But the latest story is that a curtain was hanging over a halogen fire and caught fire, right? And it happened, I might have this date wrong, but I think it's right. It happened on the 20th of November, 1992, right? And it's got a plaque on there saying it, and it said, and by chance, it just happened to be the anniversary of the wedding of Phil Greek and Liz.
Only you would pick up on this.
And you think to yourself, oh God, and these people believe this stuff, right? And And he's, and he said, and another thing he said, in that room when you get in there, I mean, I saw that plaque when I got in there, he hadn't mentioned that, but when I was talking to him, he said, in there, he said, that you'll see a suit of armour. And that was Henry VIII's jousting armour. And after the fire, which cost £50 million, the renovations cost £50 million, right? He said, after the fire, they had the suit of armour renovated, valued. And do you know how much it valued at? £50 million. Anything.
God.
You know, and there's another guide in that room when I went there, a woman. And I said, that's a bit strange, isn't it? All these coincidences. And she said, do you think so? I said, well, don't you? And she went, she didn't want to say anything. And anyway, I sort of harassed these people while I was in there. I went outside and I was just kind of walking down. I just got outside and I was walking along the kind of avenue bit. And this Asian woman came towards me, took a photograph of me and zoomed off. She took a photograph of nothing. I mean, what do you want to take a photograph of me for? You're kind of there to take photographs of the castle and views and stuff. It was like, and zoomed off. So, yeah, I think I was kind of... marked there, you know, he's a troublemaker or something, I don't know.
That's a bit odd, isn't it? Well, you would have made an interesting day for them at their job.
Yeah.
More so than the norm.
And then this guard told me to fuck off. His proper guard in his bear skin hat and stuff.
Oh, like the dudes in the red jacket and the big black hat.
Yeah, he had the big bearskin hat, yeah, but he had a grey uniform on, yeah. So, yeah.
Get rid of him, he's a troublemaker. He questions, that's what they don't want. They don't want people to question. But no, it's amazing the stuff over there. Like just seeing other things like, you know, that you've done, like your talks, you talk about the Repco, the van that I've seen you talk about before, and then looking at some of the symbolism and stuff you found or where these... Where you've talked about before, where castles or main places are publicly situated in terms of energy, and then both you and David Icke, you see a lot of both of your works and the symbolism around the world in terms of statues or whatever's in locations. This stuff is everywhere, and you can just pick it up like that. And that's what started to happen to me. I've started, because these veils are down, it's just happens now. And there's lots of it everywhere, especially in the UK. The UK just seems to be a hell of a portal for anything, you know, whether it's ghosts, UFOs, interdimensional stuff, and then all this symbolism, and it just seems to be the hotspot for it.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a very special place on the planet, and it's... I mean, they're well aware of that, and they've kept, you know, there's a lot of very ancient stones and megaliths and all that kind of stuff around, and they're all interconnected energy-wise and you know, geomantically, and they use them, I'm beginning to feel, very much is a kind of a energetic prison. Mm-hmm. And I feel that they've been tampering with a lot of these things to actually, because it's kind of like a hub. There's energy lines that go shooting out all over the planet, and they go through all the different sort of energy centers around the planet. And, you know, we're talking about the British Empire being, you know, the sun never sets on the British Empire, mm. You know, that kind of thing. Which it didn't, because, you know, wherever you were, you know, the sun was shining on it, you know.
Because it was around the world, yeah.
Yeah. And it's been deliberately suppressed because I think they are genuinely frightened of the indigenous genetics of the people here. Now, I'm not totally sure why. It may be just that some of them have got an ability that they're trying to keep down and stop awakening, you know, and all that kind of stuff. They're certainly doing everything they can to really ramp up fear and to distract people in every single way they can. All the time here, you hear it all the time, and we've got such idiots running the country. It's just absolutely appalling that people let them get away with it. But it's because these islands are so special, and they know they're so special, and that's why they've got the City of London here, and they run the, you know, everything's run from Britain in some way, shape or form. You know, it may not be obvious to a lot of people, but underneath, there it is, you know.
It's, well, I know everything here in Australia. It's not run by the bloody Prime Minister, I can tell you that, as you would know, and it surely links, where does it link straight back to? A lot of sirs. A lot of sirs, and where are they located? Over your way. So, and same in America, in Europe, everything links back to that area.
It does. And I just mentioned first, though, with Australia, you just mentioned Australia again. It's got more reptiles than any other landmass in the world. It's actually ideal for reptilians, isn't it? So it's no wonder that you'll see reptiles and reptilians all over the place, you know. And it's funny how, as you were mentioning before, with that Parliament House, was it? In Melbourne?
Yeah, I think they called, you know, the exhibition.
You've got all that symbolism of the reptiles there. There was something I saw when I was in Melbourne. Damned if I can remember what it was. There was something reptilian that I saw there in some statue or other along one of the main streets. But I can't remember the name of the street either. But at the end of it was the railway station. There was this big monument thing, and I can't remember. I think I put it on my website. But it is. And I just want to sort of mention back to Chris's film as well, because I've gone off tangent, haven't I? I had the pleasure of meeting Chris back in June, I think it was. I went to give a talk in Leeds for the Exit Politics. And I'd gone to I'd stayed at a hotel. Anthony, who runs the Exit Politics, really nice guy. He put us all up in this hotel. I went to bed, and I was like harassed all night. I had an awful night. It was like psychically, you know, just awful. I don't remember everything that happened now, but I made a note of it. And then, of course, I had to give a talk the next day, and I gave this talk, and I can't remember anything about it. I was so, like, spaced out from it all, and I was just battling demons all night, and I think I was battling demons all day. But then I had the worries of all the traffic jams in Leeds, because I had to go to Manchester to see Chris to be interviewed for this documentary. And anyway, Chris had put me up in a hotel in Manchester, and I got there. And of course, I was pretty spaced out when I gave the interview for that as well. But I met Chris, and what a nice guy. I mean, authentic. Definitely going to do a great job of that. I'm really looking forward to what he's doing. And just the clips that he's showing, if anybody wants to go on to Chris Turner's YouTube channel, you see quite a few clips on there, and you can tell by the clips on there what a quality product.
Oh, definitely. I'll put a link up underneath.
Really good.
Yeah, I'll put a link up underneath this video to his channel, and I probed him and questioned him before, and his intentions are absolutely pure, which is very rare in this field, because they want to try and showboat it, when the truth of the matter is it doesn't need to be changed or altered, because the true reality of what's going on is more entertaining enough, I think.
Well, he's certainly doing a great job. He's, you know, he's got, you know, me, you, who's that, Ike, and I can't think who else, but there's a lot of people that he's interviewed, and we're talking about experiences and researchers, and yeah, I mean, I'm really looking forward to seeing it, and I mean, he's definitely going to do a fantastic job of it, and I definitely recommend everybody to, you know, to watch it, because the people that he's having on, he's been selective, and he's, although he probably wouldn't admit it, he has got a very good intuition, and he's also very respectful. He's making no judgments on anybody. He's just showing it as is, and I think that's the best way to go. And it's gonna really shame all these mainstream media outlets that are just making a nonsense of something that people need to know about, and hopefully it'll help to wake people up to the reality of this world and this life experience that they're in, and what is actually impacting upon us, because it's not just about reptilians. When you look at these experiences, you can actually see how the unseen actually is manifesting and pulling the strings on this one. So, you need to look at it and think laterally and multidimensionally as well. So there's a lot in there, and it's well worth people taking the time to watch, as far as I'm concerned.
Definitely. And talking to him myself, he said that you yourself, David, and myself had said some things very common about where his conclusions were going. And I probed him about this, and it was very interesting to see somebody with his integrity doing such a great, fantastic job, in terms of he thought this went to the reptilians. And he thought, in other words, what he thought in the beginning before starting this project, it didn't go where he thought it would. And there, for me, was great to see that he was open-minded enough to let what you said and everyone else said in the documentary lead him to how the documentary is going to be made. Because, you know, I've had a couple of – I don't see things as positive or negative, rather serving or self-serving. And I said, look, I've had good experiences with reptilians, and I haven't. And I said, at the end of the day, there's a force behind them that is far more sinister than anyone can bloody imagine, that is way more multidimensional than what others think. And they're manipulating even the reptilians on another level, different factions, because there are different, you know, it's just like anything. But to see that he was coming to that himself through talking to everyone, because, you know, let's admit, you know, if this was a normal TV station or something like that, they would keep it making us look nuts and it to be entertainment, where he's taken this very serious and he's let what everyone said lead the documentary where it's got to go, which after hearing that from him, I was stoked, because it's opened him up and taken him places he thought he would never go. And those who aren't into this but will watch the documentary and give it a go, they're going to go on the journey with him to go, oh, you know, this is sort of, look at the places it's gone, because how it was for me. You know, years ago, I would have thought David Icke and anyone else was nuts. And I've experienced what I've experienced. And like you say, it's like having a coffee or going down to the shops. You know what you've done. You know what you've done. We know what we've experienced. And I think that, with the quality of the equipment he's using and the quality of the actual trailers so far, it's as good as any Hollywood production.
Well, yeah, and the people he works with are obviously very, very talented. You can see that from what's been produced, you know, what we've seen so far. And yeah, he's got a good lot of people with him. And yeah, I'm just so impressed with what he's done so far. And what a nice guy, you know. And I think he deserves every success with it. And I'm looking forward to seeing it. Yeah, we just so need somebody to take these subjects seriously. And it's not only that. I mean, he's clearly put a lot of time, energy, and resources into it, hasn't he? And yeah, it's not about judging, ridiculing, anything like that. It's just let the evidence flow, let people tell their stories, and I quite like the idea that he's got with all the reenactments and all that kind of stuff he's doing with it, and yeah, and actually making it into a story with it too, which that's his idea at the moment. I like that as well. So it's going to be entertaining, but also very informative. So it's not just dry and, you know, people just sort of reeling stuff out. And yeah, I'm so impressed with it. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, I am too. It ticks all the boxes. And funny enough, you have got a documentary in the pipeworks with him too, haven't you? Or something going on there as well, maybe for the future?
Yeah. He's talking about doing a life story. Yeah.
And he was with you not too long ago and filmed a craft in. There was a UFO hovering around.
That's right. Yeah. And I was giving a talk in Probe International in Blackpool, which is one of the very best conferences as far as I'm concerned. I just love going to Probe, and the people there are fantastic. They have some very interesting speakers. Sam, who runs it, is lovely. His family are lovely. And yeah, very, very interesting people in the audience as well. And he came up to film some of my talk for the documentary. So he was there with his equipment to film me on stage. We went out for he wanted to do a short car journey and film me in the car. And we were just going outside, and a couple of friends were there. And I said, "Look, Alice," and looked up, and there was this UFO in the sky just sitting there. And it had been there for a while already. So everybody's gawking at it. There was like loads and loads of people there, and people arriving, because there's also a gym there and a cafe and all sorts of things. So lots of people who weren't at the conference, and there's like 200 or 300 people from the conference, and then there's all these people arriving for the other things as well. So they all saw it too. And watched it. It just sat there in the sky, and we're not very far away from the coast. And Steve Mirra, who runs Phenomenon magazine, and he's a parapsychologist, he was giving a talk there as well. So he was outside, and he was saying, "Look, this doesn't make sense that it could sit there in the sky so close to the sea and not move." So it sat there for ages in the same place, and then it moved, and it moved over a little bit, and then sat in the sky again for ages. And people got sort of fed up with looking at it. So they just all went inside. But Chris managed to film it and take some photographs of it. I mean, he didn't have I mean, if he'd have known he was going to be taking shots of something 30,000 feet in the sky, he would have had that equipment with him, but he was only taking stage shots. So
still some good shots. I've seen some of the photos.
I was just going to say, yeah, what he did was fantastic.
What I've seen what he had was bloody better than what I got. What, in my opinion, is probably the same type of object, because I had witnesses with me at a park in Westall where there was we had a contactee sort of barbecue. And that's where an event where 200 students and teachers witnessed two crafts in 1966, which there's a Westall 66 documentary on the incident. But I was sitting there and all of a sudden looked up, and we had an object there for 10 to 15 minutes. and it was still, and then all of a sudden it just moved, and then it went back on itself over time. Like this was again near the ocean. Went back on itself, went forward by all intents and purposes with wind. This was no friggin' balloon. Everyone was seeing it. And I had a pretty good HD camera with Zoom, but Chris got better pictures than what I did of this thing, so he did a pretty darn good job.
Well, his cameraman, Noel, and he, they did a fantastic job. And I'm not knocking what he did whatsoever, because he, with what he had, he did a brilliant job. Far better than you know, anybody else could have done, probably. It's just the fact that it was a shame he didn't have, like, you know, the equipment to take pictures and get real close-ups, you know. But he did a fantastic job, he did. And that, I mean, the story went all over the world and was in some of the newspapers here as well, which was great. I think Probe got loads and loads of telephone calls from it as well. And, another exciting event at Probe. But I don't think I've ever been to Probe and something unusual has not happened. It's always something weird happens there, and it's great.
Yeah, it does with the events I go to over here as well. There's always something weird and wonderful happening. Like I was saying before the show's here, around that same time, Damien Knott was in Sydney, and that was a big – there was over – I think over a few hundred people call up about the same object in Sydney that Damien filmed. And then I think in Colorado and even New Zealand and maybe Canada before that, the same. So I'm looking at all the photos and I'm going, this is, to me, the same friggin' thing. You know what I mean? And it's just funny that these are in areas where experiences are and that type of thing. And, you know, that day with me, there was a few experiences. Then you're at the Probe Conference where everyone's got a interest in it and there would be experiences there. So,
yeah, fantastic.
This is the top stuff that happens.
I saw that you're speaking in Katoomba soon.
Yeah, there will be the next Australian Paracon conference. Travis Walton will be talking there as well, and Damien Knott, who I told you about, who's been filming lots of crafts. I think there's probably 20 to 30 speakers. But it'll be good to see, because I went to the last one at Maitland Jail and we had some experiences where me and Damien and a couple of other people were on a balcony in a craft zip by. Me and Damien didn't see it, but the others two did. And it'll be interesting to see how that goes, because lots of people have been buying tickets and telling me that they're going, so that should be good.
Well, I tell you what, I love Katoomba and the Blue Mountains, and I especially love the Carrington Hotel. It's fantastic. It's like staying on a Cluedo board. It's got all those sorts of rooms, like the snooker room and the library, and I just love it. It's a fantastic place, and haunted as anything.
Well, that's what it's well, apparently
well haunted.
Yeah,
and just brilliant. The atmosphere of the place is fantastic, and I stayed there for two nights, I think it was, and it was fantastic. Yeah.
I probably won't get a chance to watch anyone, because I'll be too busy going around trying to send stuff. I went to Australia's Most Haunted House a couple of years ago, Monte Cristo. Have you ever heard of Monte Cristo in Junee?
No.
It's been on lots of television shows. They've had lots of psychics and that on television go there. And I tell you what, that is friggin' haunted like all hell. And my brother went there for his wedding honeymoon night. And it's well known for being haunted. My brother told me about some experiences he's had there where it was almost, and he's an experienced, very skeptical, but he's an experiencer. And the only way I could describe it was like something was trying to possess him there. Anyway, I went there with a friend to investigate, and that place is just off its head. There was one bloke who was there at the same time, and he got a EVP saying, "I'm a Gillespie," and we found out from the owner at the time, Reg, who recently died, that a Mr. Gillespie built the house. And you can hear him say this on an audio, you know, "I'm a Gillespie." I was at the front with another friend who on his EVP, we got a girl at like 1 a.m. telling us, "I'm warning you, leave here," and that's where a girl was thrown off the balcony and killed. With the same bloke, I was in another room, and he started to get like as if he was being burnt. And I told the owners, "Don't tell me anything, because I just want to get what we get and just see, you know, what happens." We found out that Mr. Crowley, I think it was, or Mr. Crawley, something like that, he was the richest man in Australia or something like that at the time, and he owned the railway lines and that, and he called it Monte Cristo, the Mount of Cristo, so he could look of Mount of Christ, I mean, which Monte Cristo means, so he could look down on the town as people sort of and intimidate him. But he threw this match on a hay bale in the kid's room, who was like 7 or something, because he wouldn't get up for work, and killed him. All these different, like the amount of killings and weird stuff that went on in that house with this family was just mental. And I was very skeptical till I went there. And sure enough, I saw objects move around left, right, and center in there, like physical things being moved. And other people had experiences that night. So I'm going to, when I go to haunted places like the Carrington, when we go there, I'm going to be very interested to go. I don't know if I want to see any talks. I might go and investigate a little bit to see what's going on, but you got to be careful in situations like that. So you had a good time when you visited there?
Oh, yeah, it was lovely. I've been to Katoomba sort of, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 times, and Laura, which is the next little town, that's really nice as well. There's a good bookshop in Laura. They used to sell my books. They probably still would get them if anybody wanted them, but... Just a really nice part of the country. I do really like it there, and I'd like to think that I'll go there again one day. So we'll see.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. And apparently it's a good hotspot area too for lights in the sky and that type of thing. Which we're actually doing a sky watch there too. So that'll be interesting.
Rex Gilroy lives there, doesn't he? Rex Gilroy.
I think he does. He was at the last conference too, and I haven't spoken to him or communicated with him yet, but that would be good to talk to him, because he's been doing a lot of research for many years here.
Yeah, and he's found a lot of interesting stuff as well. I went to a talk he gave once. Mary and some other people ran a conference in Perth, and he was one of the speakers there. I remember he was talking about stuff he'd found. He's found like artifacts that are Egyptian and all that kind of stuff, you know, in Australia, jewellery and stuff.
Yeah, I've actually had Stephen and Evan Strong on the show, who I'm actually getting back on, and they've done a lot of work on the Egyptian hieroglyphs and other sort of the Aboriginal Pleiadian connection, and lots of weird and wonderful stuff that, I'll tell you what, blew me out of the water and confirmed a lot of what I'd experienced in terms of stuff that I've sort of had downloaded or received from one of the beings I communicate with. So it would be interesting to see what Rex has got too, because I didn't know that about Rex.
Right. Well, he has. And Steve Strong, I've seen some of his videos on YouTube, and I've put them on my website as well, linked to them. Very interesting stuff there as well, and I especially like the connection with the Native Australians. So I was very interested to hear what, you know, the things that he mentioned about what they were saying in the area about how, you know, the Egyptians had been there, etc., and how they'd arrived there. And good stuff, very enjoyable.
It turns history on its head, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, so they're not going to want to shout about that at all, because you know, there's a lot of credentials and a lot of kudos in where they are, and to be proven to be total
bullshit
rubbish. And the poor things have spent their lives studying all this stuff, and you know, getting all these qualifications, and it's all rubbish. You know, they're not going to rush to admit it, are they?
Not at all. It's a laugh for me. I actually showed my dad that and the evidence and the research that had been done, and dad's seen stuff with me now. He was a cop for 38 years, and when I showed him, you could tell his world crumbled from what I showed of the Egyptian-Australian connection and then the ET connection with it. But then he looked at it logically and goes, you know, this is pretty... But, you know, to see his look on his face going, oh, everything I've been taught is a load of absolute crap. And I'm like, look at the evidence, you know. And, you know, it was educational for me, and it continued... Because I follow their work still to this day, and it's very, you know, it's very groundbreaking, I think. And they do look at it logically. They're not just, you know, airy-fairy people that go with whatever. They've got evidence to... You know, and logical conclusions to what they're doing, which is good.
Yeah, I can see sense in it, for sure.
Yeah.
And when you think about in Australia, there are so many places that white people are just not allowed to go.
Mm-hmm.
And they're secret, you know, they're very special to the Native Australians. And what's in them, you know, I mean, the stories and you know, things that are going to not turn history on its head, I'm sure. So, so that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, people get very sure of themselves when they haven't got hardly any evidence for being that sure. You know, there's a lot more out there to know. So, yeah.
Coming across by the day, we're learning about more and more stuff. Look, we'll wrap it up in a minute. Is there anything you've got coming up lately besides the documentary like yours and Don't Mention the Reptilians? Is there any talks or any other things going on at the moment for you?
I've been asked to speak at Probe again in March, so I'll be there March the 29th, I think it is.
Awesome.
Other than that, just getting my back sorted, I suppose, and see what happens.
Well, I hope it sorts itself out. Everyone listening and watching to this, thanks for watching and listening to the show. But look, there's links to Ellis's website at the bottom, or if you go to the page where this is downloaded, the audio version. I think it's Otherworldly Journeys, is that right, .com?
Well, elliscktaylor.com.
Yep.
Remember to put the C in it. And that will take you to all my websites. But my daily or almost daily update page is called The Buzz Extra, and you can just click on the link from lsctaylor.com.
Lots of great stuff there too. I occasionally pop in on that and have a look at some of the latest stuff that you're coming across and Pilge's stuff. I found the link to the Pilge's stuff on.
He's a star. What a guy. Yeah, brilliant.
Look, mate, love chatting to you every time we catch up. But yeah, I appreciate what you do too, because I love following your work and what you do and how genuine you are. So it's a pleasure to have you on. I'll try not to leave it so long next time around a year, but so much has happened. It's been awesome to catch up with you, mate.
Thank you very much, and lovely to speak to you as well, mate.
We'll talk soon.
All the best to you, and well done for what you do.
Thank you. That's appreciated, mate.
Good on you, mate.
All righty. We'll talk soon.
Cheers. Bye-bye.